There's something magical about seeing a hot air balloon in the sky. Whether it's miles away from you, or you're standing next to it as it launches, hot air balloons bring out a joy in so many people. That's certainly the case at the annual Hudson Hot Air Affair, an event that has been bringing dozens of hot air balloons and thousands of people to Hudson each winter for the past 35 years. During the first weekend of February, around 30 balloons come to Hudson to launch as part of an event that has become a community-wide celebration. As the 2024 Hudson Hot Air Affair approaches, I talked with two people who have been involved in the event for years, John Knutson, one of the five founders of the Hot Air Affair, and Ken Walter, a balloonist from the Milwaukee area who has been flying balloons here for many years. I hope you enjoy learning a bit more about one of my favorite annual events, the Hudson Hot Air Affair. Well, it's almost time of year for the Hudson Hot Air Affair, and I've got one of the five founders of the Hot Air Affair with me today, John Knutson, who's also been a local business owner. But we're going to be talking today about the Hot Air Affair and kind of its history and some of the things to look forward to this year. So, John, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Tyler. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your backstory. I know you've lived in Hudson a long time. Maybe just a little bit about you and who you are.
Yeah, very good. I'm a graphic artist by trade, and okay. I came to Hudson in 1989 to start a printing company called RPG. And we later merged into the Resco company. And after Resco, I thought I was going to retire, but at 51, healthcare was going to be a little too much.
Oh,
so
sure.
I ended up buying a sports medicine clinic called Catalyst Sports Medicine.
Sure.
And ran that for 10 years, and we sold that to Twin City Orthopedics, and now I'm officially retired. So I'm happy to be a grandfather that visits his grandkids and kids a lot.
Sure.
So... Yeah, so that's the business side of things. I'll give you a little history on Hot Air Affair.
Yeah, please do.
It started when there were four friends of mine from the chamber. It was Evie Nurbin, Carla Timmerman, Linda White, and myself were at a chamber event at the old Hudson Golf Club when it was on Cooley Road.
Yeah.
And the bar manager at the time was a woman by the name of Rose Akins, and Rose was a hot air balloon pilot.
Okay.
And while we were at a chamber event, after the event, we were sitting together and talking, and Rose had said, "Hey, I'm going to put my balloon up in February." And we all looked at each other like she was crazy and saying, what do you mean, in the middle of winter?
Yeah.
You know? And she said, "Well, you got to remember, hot air balloons, hot air rises. And so the balloons actually use a lot less propane and fly in the winter quite well, as long as it isn't too windy." And the four of us as chamber members kind of looked at each other and said, "Well, you know, hey, if you're going to do that, do you have other friends? And could we make a community event out of this?"
Yeah.
And that's how the idea started with Hot Air Affair. Rose Akins, the local balloon pilot, had the idea of flying in February. The reason she was talking in February, too, is Farmer's Almanac always says the lightest winds of the winter are in the first week of February. So that's if you ever wonder what date the Hot Air Affair is, just look at a calendar and find the first full Friday, Saturday, Sunday in February.
Sure.
And that's when it's going to be.
Very
and
cool.
So Rose invited a number of friends the first year, and it grew every year by other pilots hearing about it and asking, you know, if they could come.
Sure.
And we literally at one point got to as many as 50 balloons.
Wow.
But what we realized with 50 is the launch field and the conditions got a little bit unsafe.
Probably
just
not
because
enough space.
Of the crowding.
Yeah,
exactly right. And, you know, liftoff and things like that safely was so important. So we limit it now to between 30 and 32 balloons a year.
Sure. So you mentioned 1990 was the first one. What do you remember about the first Hot Air Affair? you know, what that one was like, you know, 35 years ago.
Yeah. You know, the first Hot Air Affair in 1990, I remember quite well. It literally was just the balloon event.
Okay.
And the biggest thing with hot air balloons is weather permitting, right?
Right.
And so the balloons can't fly if the winds are above 8 knots. Mm-hmm. And actually, people kind of get confused. They wonder why they can't fly. They actually fly well, and they fly fast in high winds. The sure. problem is taking off and landing.
Yeah.
And so with high winds, the landing is the most dangerous. Mm. And so, again, the pilots are very smart. You know, it's the old adage with airline pilots, too. There's old pilots and bold pilots, but not old, bold pilots. And so hot air ballooning is the same. And what I've always found is these balloon pilots are very cautious, mm-hmm. you know, and they need to be if they're going to survive.
Their life's on the line if they're not. Yeah.
So the first couple years, we just had the balloon takeoffs. We usually would do a Saturday morning takeoff and then a Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock, and then we'd do a Sunday morning takeoff. Hmm. And in a typical winter, we're lucky if we get one or two of the three flights off. Mm-hmm. And there were several years where no flights were able to take off. And so probably the biggest change, you know, 34, 35 years later, is that we have the whole weekend just jam-packed with events because we're cognizant of the fact that we want the weekend to be for the visitors and the tourists. And we want things to happen even if the balloons don't go up.
Yeah.
I would literally say in 35 years, we might have only had one or two years where all three flights have taken off.
Wow.
Yeah. And
kind of luck of the draw.
Well, and unfortunately, I would say we've had a good, you know, 8 or 10 years where they didn't fly at all.
Yeah.
Because of wind and weather. And a lot of times if it's overcast too, or the visibility is poor, if you can't see where you're going to land, it's going to be tough.
That's a problem.
You know? So that's been the biggest thing. Initially just being the balloon flights and gradually over time we've added, you know, they're literally, if you look at the brochure, if you go to HudsonHotAirfare.com onto the website, you'll see that there's pre-events for a couple of weeks before.
Right.
There's a lot of events on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we draw anywhere from 10 to 15,000 people for the weekend.
That's great. Yeah. So you kind of mentioned some of the ways that it's evolved over the years. Anything that really kind of stands out is things that the Hudson Hot Air Fair does today that, you know, when you first started this, you maybe couldn't have imagined doing at the time.
Yeah, the biggest thing is probably the craft fair, too, where the craft fair has multiple purposes. Number one, if the balloons don't fly, it gives people something to do to mill around to I don't know how many vendors there are, 50, 60,
quite
70
a few,
vendors. There's a lot of vendors. It's in the EP Rock School, so people can get warm if they're cold from being outside.
Yeah.
You know, food is served. And so, you know, that is one of the biggest events that we hold. But, there's other events. There's geocaching. There's candlelight ski out at YMCA Camp St. Croix, usually, or Willow River Park. They've had a couple different venues for that. One event that I run that I'm particularly proud of is a smooshboarding
event. That's right, you see that. Yep.
If you haven't heard of smooshboarding, it's four people on two skis or smooshboards strapped together, and the rules are pretty slim. let's just say there aren't.
Is this something that was invented for the hot air fair? Or is
no,
this
a, no, you know, okay. we picked it up. I can't remember. I think it was in Duluth or Superior at a winter event. We saw this and thought, well, that would adapt perfectly to the EP Rock School grounds, on the launch field there. And so I set up cones as kind of I say obstacle races. There's really no obstacles. It's just cones. But four people on two skis having to move in unison together, it can be challenging.
Yeah.
And so I'll have them crisscross, and a lot of times there's a little bumping and shoving and good-natured fun. But, they end up having to win the race. But it sounds simple, but trying to get four people to move perfectly in unison is just, it's hilarious.
Yeah, so
it's,
trying to get four people to agree to do anything is a challenge,
exactly,
right?
That's exactly right. So smooshboarding is a fun event. We generally have anywhere from 4 to 10 teams come each year.
Okay.
The event takes about an hour or so, and we have prizes for the race winners, and then we also have prizes for best costumes. So I say, even if you're no good, dress up, you'll win the same prizes.
Yeah. You know? So,
and I kid all the time, it's $10 entry fee per team.
Okay.
And I always say, you'll have the ability to win prizes worth well under $10. You know? So it's kind of fun. I tell people you got to endure a little humiliation from the MC who you know, makes fun of these teams as they're falling, you know, and stuff. But it's a blast. The smooshboarding's fun. Another highlight to the event is on Friday night we hold what we call the Torchlight Parade.
Yeah, through downtown.
And if you haven't been to the Torchlight Parade, we literally will draw 4,000 to 5,000 people at this parade, and it's about 3 blocks long. You know, we go from the Wells Fargo parking lot. We head south on 2nd Street. Mm-hmm. We take a right-hand turn by the Dragon Pearl restaurant that goes down by Dick's Bar and ends at the front of Lakefront Park.
Yeah.
And then after the parade, they do fireworks at the park, which is great. So fireworks is something we added in the later years.
Okay.
But the Torchlight Parade, we have the pilots come in their baskets and costumes, and they're burning all the way down the street, and it's quite a spectacle.
Yeah, I've been to that before, and it is a good time, especially for a fun wintertime activity. You don't see fireworks too often in the winter in this part of the country, so that's always cool. I'm sure there's been plenty of memorable moments over the years of the Hudson Hot Air Fair, but what's maybe something that stands out to you as a favorite moment, or maybe a couple things that really stand out?
You know, personally for me, you know, I really enjoy being part of the committee and working. I don't, later, 30-some years later, I don't do quite as much with meeting. People don't understand, to put this event together, we have a committee that literally starts a week or two after the Hot Air Fair for next year.
No rest for the weary.
Literally, they meet probably weekly for almost the full year prior, because there's just so many details.
Yeah.
And if you look at the Hot Air Fair brochure, or go online, you'll just see it's an unbelievable event, you know, with volunteers that takes place. But like I said, from the parade on Friday night and the fireworks to the balloon launches, smooshboarding on Saturday at 1 o'clock, they have competitive kite flying events, I think, at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
It's a myriad of events, but I think personally, you know, being on the committee, I've flown 3 or 4 times over the years.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously after 30 some years, the companies that I ran, we would normally, you know, raffle or auction or give away the flights to employees, stuff. And again, the hardest thing to tell the potential riders is that it's weather permitting. You know, they get so excited and they tell everybody they're going to fly and then sometimes they don't.
They just can't.
And it is what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, flying, it's a misperception. I think people ask, is it windy up there? And when you think about it, you're actually flying with the wind.
Right.
So
probably don't feel
there
it.
There is no wind. Yeah. I mean, basically you're
probably cold up there though, I guess.
Well, you know, what gets cold is your toes.
Okay. Sure.
In the bottom of the basket, what stays warm is your upper half because of the propane
burners.
Yeah,
sure.
And so while the pilot is burning the propane burners, the burst of heat is incredible.
Yeah.
And very welcome. So flying is terrific. Being able to see, you know, the deer and the coyotes and foxes and, you know, the animals on the farms and stuff, it's just a spectacular vantage point.
Yeah. And, I mean, even in the summertime, we'll see hot air balloons flying, you know, coming over Hudson, maybe flying from the other side of the river. And
All the time. Yeah.
No matter when I see a hot air balloon up in the air, it's a cool thing. We've had a couple times we were at Willow River State Park, and there was one that got pretty low, too, and we could hear, you know, the propane and everything, and I don't know how it got that low, but it's just always a cool thing to see.
They often do what's called a touch and go, you know, where they literally come down and kind of touch and then burn and come back up. And, you know, as everybody kind of knows, you don't really steer hot air balloons. They're at the mercy of the winds.
Yep.
Now, depending on where the winds are and heading in what direction at what height, you know, because at 100 or 200 feet, the winds may be going east to west, but at another 500 feet, they may be going in an entirely different direction, you know. And we had an interesting phenomenon happen one time, and it's called a box flight. And what is meant by that is one year, the balloons took off from the EP Rock school, and they flew toward the Christian Community Home, which would be kind of northwest a little bit. Which is only about a half mile away. And then they would ascend, but then the wind shifted and they came back and they landed back at EP Rock school grounds. So they kind of went up and over and up and back and down. And it was a box flight where they landed where they took off. I've never seen that before. Most oftentimes, the balloons end up flying kind of northwest. You know, and so, but they've gone southeast, they've gone southwest. You do have to be careful with the river. You know,
I suppose.
I mean, it's, you know, the pilots are very good, again, kind of trying to understand the weather conditions. But the biggest thing they have to consistently do is look for landing spots in case something might happen, or they got to land early before a river. A lot of times if there's no wind and they get stuck above the interstate, it's an issue a little bit with no wind. You know, you're going to come down on the interstate. So they have to be a little careful. But always weather-related.
Yeah, and we're going to have a balloonist, Ken Walter, on the episode, later on the episode to talk kind of about his perspective as someone who's up in the air quite a bit, too. So we'll get some more, you know, kind of what it's like from him as well. But I'm curious, how do you go about kind of recruiting balloonists? Or to this point, is it, I think you maybe even said, you get people reaching out to just wanting to be part of it?
As long as we've been going, you know, again, we started with Rose Akins, and Rose knows so many pilots. And it literally is like a brotherhood, you know. And and Rose recruited the pilots easily. And it's a lot of fun. We're known, the Hudson Hot Airfare is known as the largest and best winter hot air ballooning event in the country. You know, and not many people do it, obviously. So we were kind of probably the, I don't know if we were the first, but, you know, after sustaining it for 30 plus years, you know, we've developed a little bit of a reputation. Yeah. So we have balloons coming from all over. And what will happen is a number of our pilots and even committee members will go to Albuquerque and other balloon festivals and events. So they'll talk to people all the time. We have never had trouble getting balloons. And part of the reason for that, too, is that we cover most of the expenses for the pilots. So we usually will cover hotel rooms. We cover the propane costs. In the past, we've even run some contests for the pilots. One is called the Hare and Hound Race, where while they're flying, the lead balloon is the hare, and then where they land, they'll put a 12-foot X on the ground, and the balloons following them have to try to mirror their movements, both vertically and with the winds, and then they try to throw a beanbag onto the X, and the one that gets closest it wins, and they would win cash prizes and stuff like that. So we try to keep it interesting for the pilots. We keep it fun. Like I said, we've never had any trouble getting pilots.
Yeah, that's awesome. What do you know the farthest that a pilot has come from?
You know, I don't. Boy, I haven't specifically worked with the pilots myself. Evie and Carla and Linda White. Would certainly know, but I, you know, we have corporate balloons, the Remax corporate balloon will come. We have one of the fun things that everybody likes are the custom shapes. You know, and we've had everything from the Green Goblin.
I remember that
to the, we had a tennis shoe. We've got the rubber ducky. We've got, you know, the custom shapes are just incredible. Probably the most beautiful balloon, and I, our company, Catalyst, has been a sponsor for the Montgolfier balloon. And that was built by Dave and Sue Johnson from the Lakeland area. And they would fly with the Whitaker Balloon Organization. And so Larry Nicolay, the pilot, call him Bubba. Bubba flies the Montgolfier balloon quite often. And it's a historic recreation of the Montgolfier brothers who built a balloon back in the 1800s and flew and And the blue and the gold trim and stuff, it's just a spectacular looking balloon. And
is that the hand painted one or one of those? Because you've had some, those in recent years, those are one of my favorites.
Yes, the gentleman, we've actually had him at several of our events. Charlie Markert is his name. Charlie was is a hand painter. He literally hand paints these beautiful balloons, and they're just spectacular. One year, I think we had 5 or 6 of his balloons at our event that flew, and they're just he does an incredible job. It's kind of a lost art, you know. So most balloons now are stitched together with colored fabric, but those hand painted balloons are really
something to
see. Yeah.
Do you have does one balloon stand out over the whole time as your favorite one of all time?
I will say my favorite balloon was the first balloon that Rose Akins flew.
Okay.
And it was called the Orion, and with the Orion constellation.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And the old Archer on the balloon and stuff. It was blue and white and black with a character on the side. And I also like the Montgolfier balloon.
Mm-hmm.
Another crowd favorite is a group that used to come, and their balloons have been decommissioned now because they're only good for a certain number of years, and then the envelopes have to be inspected. The envelope meaning the balloon, the nylon balloon or the fabric balloon. When they become too porous, allowing too much air through them, they'll decommission the balloons. But we're the Red Baron balloons. So there's a group of pilots called themselves the Red Barons, and they'd always wear red. And I always think in terms of the St. Paul Vulcans.
Okay.
From the St. Paul Winter Carnival.
Yeah, sure.
The Red Barons are kind of like that. They were rowdy guys, just fun-loving guys, but they'd use the old Red Baron airplane, you know, on the side of their red balloons, and they were just fun, you know.
That's
so,
cool.
Over the years, and again, the custom shapes are always incredible. Yeah, I've got hundreds of favorite balloons. So
yeah, I mean, it's always just the display of just bright colors, and as you said, different shapes. And you know, I think the Green Goblin one for me is one of my favorites, but the hand painted one from I remember in recent years.
Yeah,
those are really cool too. But really, just it doesn't really matter what they look like. Just seeing them in action is
pretty
cool too.
The best part is the most spectacular setting is on the Saturday or Sundays if we get a nice little snowfall and then bright sunshine. So you got the bright white backgrounds and the sun and the myriad of colors. It's just, there's nothing like it.
Yeah,
it's just spectacular.
Really, yeah, really is. Now you've mentioned a couple of times now, weather permitting is kind of a term you use a lot. And, you know, there's people that come from out of town to come visit this, and obviously they know that, you know, they may or may not take off. But how do you, as, you know, one of the organizers, navigate those challenges of knowing that, you know, people are waiting to kind of see if they're going to launch, and you might have some people that are a little bit disappointed if they don't, but ultimately it's out of your control. How do you kind of navigate that part of it?
Well, we've done a lot better with that over the years, of course, too. Early on, it was like, show up and see what happens, you know, and
before social media and all that stuff.
So what we've done in more recent years is obviously with the TV and radio stations around, they will cover and make announcements of, yes, they'll be flying, or no, they won't. It's always online. If you go onto the Hudson Hot Air Affair website, they'll give up-to-date announcements. What usually happens on, let's take Saturday morning for the first flight, which in great circumstances, they'll be arriving a little after 7:30 in the morning and inflating and taking off about 8 o'clock. Before they arrive, they'll do a pilot's gathering.
Okay.
They'll do a pilot's meeting. And so the balloonmeister, who has checked out the weather, often they'll send somebody to the launch field and they'll put up what they call a pie balloon. So it's a black balloon, and they'll just release the balloon.
Hmm.
And they'll get an idea of confirming the weather of, you know, winds aloft at 1,000 feet are X number of knots in this direction. And it's very scientific from the fact of the pilots know what's going on.
Right.
And so what we always tell people is just just be sure you're touching base with the medias, whether right. it's the website, radio stations, TV stations.
And your Facebook page is usually got some updates on there.
That's a really good place because we post it as quickly as we can. But the catch 22 is that we don't give a final answer sometimes until hopefully 30 minutes prior to the flight. But sometimes it could be a little bit less than that. Yeah. So I always tell people that, you know, use your judgment. If the weather on the TV station or on the websites and stuff shows that the winds are just drastic, they're not going to get better within the half hour probably, and they probably won't fly. And a lot of times what will happen is the Balloonmeister will advise that it's pilot's discretion. Now, what that means is, okay, Tyler, if you're a 15-year veteran of this event, and I'm a two-year pilot, I might not fly, but maybe you will.
Someone with some
experience.
And
so sometimes it's, you know, it'd be what they'd call safer conditions or balloon or pilot's discretion. Many of the pilots have seen everything, you know, and many have not. And so for safety's sake, oftentimes it'll be a pilot's discretion flight. And we never make it, you know, despite the fact that the fans all want everyone to fly, we absolutely do not make those decisions. That's, you know, we're not balloon pilots. And so we let the pilots make those decisions, and they're smart about it. We've been, knock on wood, we've been historically very lucky. We really have not had any major incidents with balloons.
That's good,
And like I said, you know, you hear every once in a while, sparingly, Albuquerque will have a balloon burst into flames somebody else. But again, you know, we're flying 30 balloons. They're flying
hundreds,
600 or nearly 1,000 balloons. And so the opportunity is going to be greater for a potential incident like that.
And even as we talked about before, even if the balloons don't go, there's a lot of different things that people can participate in. What pride do you take in just the fact that this has become, as you said, not just a balloons launching, but really a community-wide weekend-long or maybe even weeks-long event? I mean, what does that mean to you to see how it's developed into that?
Yeah, I'd like to think it's one of my personal legacies of just being involved. And again, I don't do nearly as much as Evie Nurbin, Carla Timmerman, and Linda White do. Rose Akins, the original pilot, has moved out of town and hasn't been involved every year. She was really the original founder. But the four of us have carried it on. I have said that, hey, listen, I love you guys to death, but I'm not going to meet 52 weeks a year anymore. And so what I do is I sponsor the smoosh boarding. I MC the parade. I'll usually be in costume and I'll lead the parade, but then stop at the announcer's booth and then announce the rest of the parade. I MC the pilot reception on Friday night, you know, and different things like that. And then smoosh boarding, of course. So I always tell people I don't have any talent, but I can talk. So if you need somebody to talk,
I might need your own podcast.
I haven't figured. You know, I'm an old guy. The podcast, that's new age stuff. So you'll have to teach me.
Sure,
about that.
I'll show you how to get your own. Just kind of thinking about that too. I mean, what's the when you think about people that come into town for it? What would you guess, you know, percentage wise of or out of towners, and maybe give examples of how far you've heard people travel for the hot air fair?
Well, I'll give you one example. You know, like I said, we're 34, 35 years into this since 1990. There is a group of ladies from Milwaukee. In fact, they're called the Women from Milwaukee. They've been coming for, I think, 27 years.
Wow.
And there's a group of like 10 to 15 of them.
Okay.
And so they've been grand marshals of our parade.
Oh, cool.
We've invited them to participate. Several of the ladies really like to come for smoosh boarding, and they help me with judging and the rules and different things like that. So the ladies from Milwaukee, I mean, every year they drive 5.5 hours, stay in hotels for the weekend, have a lot of fun enjoying the dining experiences available in the Hudson area.
Yeah.
And they just love the hot airfare. So, but we've had people, and again, we've got relatives of families that come in from California and New York, and they'll stay with their Hudson families over the holidays, in part just to come to the hot airfare. So,
that's awesome.
You know, like I said, you get 15,000 people. I would say probably 50% of them are from outside of the Hudson area.
Okay. Right,
you know, that's a guess.
Yeah, it's hard to know for
really
sure.
Know. We don't poll an interview every year.
but I mean, at any rate, it's proven to be just a big boom for the town. And, you know, in a time of year, February, where maybe not otherwise a big tourist draw for, you know, this part of the country. But I think that's something that you should be proud of and everyone else involved should be proud of, just the impact it's had on, you know, bringing people into the community from an economic standpoint, too, and just really kind of spreading the word about Hudson.
Well, the economic boom, I mean, to several industries, the hotels are absolutely book solid. The gas stations and convenience stores are just overrun with patrons.
Sure.
The grocery stores, the restaurants.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I would say, you know, we take a lot of pride in the event, but the economic impact of so many other businesses during the weekend because of what we're doing, that's pretty cool too.
Yeah. A couple last ones here for you. Looking ahead to this year's event, what can people expect to see at this year's Hot Air Fair that maybe is either different or just anything that you're particularly excited about this year?
Oh, gosh. It isn't. Yeah, we've done it a couple of years now, but the geocaching event is something that, you know, I have not geocached myself, but I heard it's kind of a fun type of event. One of the things I think that's new this year, or might have been last year, is they have a Bloody Mary kind of a walk.
And
you can buy tickets and become part of that whole scene.
Different places in town, different bars and restaurants.
Yeah, and that's a fundraiser too as well. And you know, the skiing out at you know, the YMCA camp or Willow River is always a great event. That's usually pre-event, a week or so ahead. And then the old tried and true stuff is still the best. You know, the craft fair is always incredible.
Yeah.
You know, one of my friends, Lana Schoberg, has showcase hats.
Okay.
And they're the polar fleece hats that are so colorful. If you go to the Hot Air Fair launch field on any given day, there are hundreds of people wearing Lana's hats. You can just
tell
the polar fleece, the warm hats, the bright colors. I mean, she makes characters and animals and tassels. I own, I think, five or six different
rotate them
showcase
in
hats, you know, and they're beautiful. So the theme this year, too, I should mention to you, is Rockin' with the Coldies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's obviously a spin on the Rockin' with the Oldies.
Yep.
And so I think, I guess I can tell you, my costume this year is a nice Elvis rendition.
Oh,
so
nice.
I'll come
right.
with my pompadour hairdo white sequined duds and it'll be fun. But everybody dresses up. It's quite a spectacle.
Yeah. Have you tried the costume on yet? Is it how's it look?
I've tried it on. The weird part is I always have to get like a XL or double XL because of all the clothes
the
I have to wear under it. You know, I mean,
you're out there for a long time. You gotta stay warm.
Awfully hard to go out in spandex in the middle of February. You know, so yeah, it's. The costume does fit with ample room, so I'm happy with that. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, well, that was my last hot air fair question. I got one last one for you, but I encourage, if anyone listening has not been yet, really encourage you to check it out. As John has illustrated, a lot of different things going on in town all throughout that weekend. So, and if the balloons do launch, it's awesome. Even if they don't, still a lot to see. The last question that I leave every guest with, and you're someone who's lived here a long time and been very involved in the community, what would you say is your favorite thing about Hudson?
Well, you know, I had ran a couple of businesses here in town, like I said, with the printing companies and then Catalyst Sports Medicine.
Yeah.
And I tell anybody that cares to listen, Hudson is the best place in the state to do business.
Hmm.
You know, if you've got a distribution business, we've got rail. We've got the St. Croix River for shipping. We've got the interstate, obviously.
Yeah.
And we've got an international airport within 30 minutes.
Right.
You know, and so, but what's even better is the business climate in Hudson. I really appreciate the governors and the state of Wisconsin that they really are pro-business. Mm-hmm. And being able to run a business in a pro-business environment.
Yeah.
I won't talk about our neighbors to the west in Minnesota, but I often have friends who have literally told me that they moved their business from Minnesota to Wisconsin because of property taxes and workman's compensation costs and things like that.
Yeah.
We're coming over to Wisconsin as an immediate economic impact because it's better for business. You know, we've got Mary Claire Olson's the president of the Hudson Chamber of Commerce. Mary, there's no one that works harder at promoting Hudson and chamber membership than Mary Claire. We've got a great chamber. We have kind of unique geography too. So we have the great historic downtown,
right?
But then we have the hill,
and the newer businesses.
You know, I would say I've been lucky enough to be on the hill with the printing company and Catalyst, where parking's no problem. You pull up to your front door and no cost for parking and all that, and it's fabulous. It's a great place to do business. We've never had trouble getting employees. I always say if you treat employees like your greatest asset and pay them above average, you'll never have trouble getting employees.
Right.
And so the staff that I've been able to assemble just been fabulous. And Hudson's just an awesome place to live and to work and to play.
Yeah, and to fly hot air balloons.
And to fly hot air balloons, too. That's right.
Well, John, thanks so much for being on St. Croix Stories with me. Best of luck with this year's hot air affair. Fingers crossed that the weather cooperates. But again, even if it doesn't, there's lots to do. So again, thanks for sharing a bit about the history, about all the exciting things going on with the hot air affair.
You got it, Taylor. We'll see if we can get you up in a balloon this year.
That'd be fun.
All right.
Well, for the second part of this episode on the Hudson Hot Air Fair, I'm excited to be joined by a balloonist who has participated in this in the past. Ken Walter is the chief pilot and owner of Wind Dancer Balloon Promotions in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Ken, how are you doing today?
I am doing excellent. I'm doing excellent. How are you, Tyler?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to chat a little bit more about hot air balloons with you and kind of your experience. You're a very experienced balloonist, which I believe is the correct term. You've been flying balloons for over 35 years. How did you first get started with hot air balloons?
I actually started by crewing. I had a friend that crewed for a balloon here in the Milwaukee area, and they convinced me to come out at 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning to go, set up a hot air balloon. And I, for a long time, thought that they were nuts. And I finally gave in, because at the time, the occupation I was in didn't really, Sundays was my day off, my day to sleep in. I was a truck driver. I was on the, up at 5 o'clock every morning otherwise.
And so sure.
I wasn't crazy about it, but, to appease the friends and the issues, I went out, and after that first time I was hooked, and I knew this was something that I wanted to do. It started out as a hobby, and I've been blessed and fortunate enough to be able to turn it into a part-time business, and then now it's into a full-time business.
Very cool. And it's a family business too. I know your wife and your kids are involved as well. Tell me about what it's like to have them all working together with you.
Yeah. Well, the thing with ballooning is, it's not something that you can do by yourself. You need to have friends, people involved, and it's become, such a, not just a hobby or a passion. It's become my lifestyle, and it's, my kids no other way than ballooning. And fortunately, my wife enjoys and loves ballooning as much as I do. That's how we met. She, a friend of hers talked her into coming out crewing. And so she came out crewing, and that's how we had met. And it's just, snowballed from there, being able to do an activity like this with my whole family, is awesome. My kids are sports kids too. They play football. They play all those sports. My son's in college playing D3 football, for out in Iowa. And, it's like I say, ballooning has become, part of a lifestyle. In fact, he's at a school that's an aviation school as well. So he's majoring in business and minoring in aviation. So, he's going to manage this business when he gets out of college. So it's just really, really pretty neat. And there's not many people or many families that can say that, their activity that they do is their sport, their hobby is all, their family is involved. That's cool. sometimes, you know, I get the thing from my family, well, all we ever do is, you know, when we go on vacation, we go ballooning, you know, and it's and that's true. You know, we go to different balloon events all around the country.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's afforded me the luxury of my family to be able to see parts of the country and even parts of the world that, you know, they wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. And, you know, I know a lot of guys love golf, but this is a heck of a lot better than golf, I think.
Well, and speaking of travel, you mentioned you travel a lot for different hot air balloon events, including Hudson for the Hudson Hot Air Fair. What makes this event here in Hudson unique, maybe compared to some of the others that you you know travel to throughout the country?
Hudson is pretty cool because of its you know, just the town's history on the St. Croix River. You know, it's just a, you know, it's a quaint little town, and you know, the folks that started this whole thing, you know, wanted to do something in the wintertime because, you know, it's especially with ballooning, when you get more into the northern part of Wisconsin, you know, the Minnesota area, there's a lot more lakes and trees and stuff like that, and it makes it harder to balloon during the summer months. You know, we don't have as many landing sites. So the cool thing there is, you know, we can land on lakes, we can land on rivers, you know, that are frozen and safe, right? Obviously, I don't know if we'll have that this year or not, but
warm this year,
yeah. But, you know, that's one of the things that makes that area unique, and having a winter activity, it's just a great time for balloonists from around the area, to get together and, in the middle of winter and, you know, have some fun, some fellowship, and, you know, hopefully we get the opportunity to fly and display our balloons. You know, ballooning is more efficient in the winter. We don't go through as much fuel because of the density altitude. The balloons don't have to get as hot inside to create lift. So it's not as hot, like on an 80 degree day, you know, that's a lot harder on the balloon.
Sure.
And on people, you know, when it's hotter, we've launched in Hudson in temperatures as low as, I think, 15 or 17 below is the coldest that ever had balloons launch. And that's just too cold for man or beast. But, you know, when it's in the teens and 20s, you know, it's great ballooning. So people say, you know, why would you want to do this in the middle of winter? You know, it's no different than any other winter sport. I mean, look at all the people that go snowmobiling, skiing, right. Stuff like that.
Ice pond hockey. Yep.
Right. You dress for it, you know, and dress for the weather, and it's all good. And that's the thing, circling back to your original question, you know, the uniqueness of the area, the topography, and the people, you know, and you know, every event has great people involved, and that's what keeps everybody coming back. You know, John and Carla and Evie and, you know, all the people that are on the committee are so dedicated to, you know, making this event not only super cool for the community, but for the pilots too, to be able to bring the pilots in, you know. And again, I feel fortunate and blessed to be able to be part of the committee and help make the decisions for what we're going to have every year, and, you know, for the flying weather, you know, and conditions for flying.
And how long, do you remember the first time you came to the hot air fair here in Hudson, or I guess how many years have you been coming to this?
Evie asked me that question the other day, and I want to say that, you know, I'd have to look back in my logbook to see when the first log flight I had in Hudson was.
Sure.
I'm thinking it was around 2002.
Okay.
2001, somewhere in there, when I was a pilot. Now, I came as a crew with another pilot in the 90s. We came to the event in Hudson, and there also used to be, way years ago, an event over in Menominee. But those were like the wintertime events, and you know, as a crew person, as a crew chief, I went to those. So I'm going to say it's been at least 20 years I've been coming to Hudson. I may have missed, you know, a couple, you know, for different reasons, but I know I've been on the committee now, I think, 5 or 6 years, and probably, you know, I'd say it's probably been, you know, a good 15 years that I've been there every year.
Very cool. Yeah, and I've lived in Hudson coming up on 13 years, and try to get over there every year if I can, or at the very least, you know, can see them from my house when they do fly. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool tradition for not only people that live here, but people like yourself who travel from, you know, other parts of the state or even other parts of the country. I talked to John a little bit about, you know, how far people come to to visit this, which is a pretty cool thing. Do you have any memorable moments from past Hudson Hot Air Fairs that stand out to you? Anything that kind of resonates over the years with you?
You know, it's just, you know, like I said about the flying area, it's such a, the topography, it's such a beautiful flying area. I remember I was going through this in my mind the other day. I remember a flight, I don't know how long ago, it's probably been 7 or 8 years ago. We flew from EP Rock School and we were flying to the north. It was a, it was an afternoon flight, which we don't commonly get afternoon flights. But it was a beautiful day. It was a little overcast and, you know, there was some snow in the forecast, you know, light snow, you know, that type of thing, which light snow is not a big deal to flying. I mean, there's no weather associated with it. It's, there's no storms or low pressure system that was associated with it. It was just because it was cool and all the moisture in the air. And we were flying north and not exactly over the St. Croix River, but just to the, I don't even know what that little.
Probably to the east. Was it Lake Malilou maybe?
Yeah, Malilou, I think that's it. That's just off of the lake. And I come down over that, and me and another balloonist come down, and we kind of came down close to the lake. And all of a sudden, I look, and here's three eagles.
Oh,
and
wow.
The eagles are soaring around us. And we climbed up out of there, and it was cool. And, of course, back then, that was a time where, you know, even now, these cameras on our phones don't work as well when it's so cold. So I didn't really get any pictures of it, but you know, it's ingrained in my head, that flight with those eagles flying around. And just as we launched out of there, it started to lightly snow. And the cool thing when you think about snow falling and you think about a balloon rising, and you get to that point where you're the snowfall is either looks like it's going up, or if you're descending at the same rate as the snowfall. Here I'm using my hands and I'm not even on video. The snowflakes are suspended in the sky because you're moving at the same rate that the snow is. And that's really kind of cool. But, you know, like I say, you know, there's a line from a song, you know, every battery dies, but your memory never will. And that's one of those things that I'll always have, even though I didn't get, you know, pictures of it on a camera.
Yeah. Sometimes the mental images are better than the actual physical.
Right. Fortunately, for the most part, we do have good enough weather where we can generally every year get something done. Now, there's always going to be people that are like, oh, the balloons never fly, this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, well, you have to remember that we're very weather specific. And because we're aviation, you know, we have to be very safe. You know, it's like if you think about when you're driving down the road, if the conditions aren't right, you have to be safe for that or not be on the road. And people don't think about it that way. They just think balloons can fly anytime, but we can't. You know, micrometeorology is the toughest thing to learn about ballooning. And we not only have to know and understand the weather, we also have to be able to basically forecast the weather in the area that we're in for, you know, the following 3 hours, and know not only what it's doing now, but what's it going to be like in an hour or an hour and a half when we decide to land. You know, we need to know what the weather's going to be like then. We're very wind dependent. You know, that's the key thing. You know, we have to fly when the wind is less, lower. You know, we want to fly when it's under 8 knots or 10 miles an hour. So we can, you know, seasoned veteran pilots can fly in winds that might be a little bit stronger than that, but then we're up and we're gone in 2 minutes and then you don't see the balloons. So, it's like, you know, we want to be able to set the balloons up in slower, nicer weather, you know, that you can see them for a while and enjoy the majesty of them on the ground and then, you know, launch after that. Like I say, it's so wind and weather permitting. And like anything else, I mean, if it's a low pressure system coming in, you know, when there could be storms in the area, and the thing about winter time is pressure systems last longer in the winter than they do in the summer. So, I mean, you might have, you know, an afternoon thunderstorm or rain shower come through and, you know, it shows up on radar at 3 o'clock and it's gone by 6 o'clock. Most times with weather systems in the winter, because of where the jet stream is and how the weather patterns work, those systems don't move that fast. You know, generally, if it's, you know, a weather system comes in, you know, it's going to hang around for 8, 10, 12, 24 hours, 36 yeah. hours, you know, that's just the way weather works. And,
right.
you know, we don't, as pilots, we don't come to these events to just come hang out, drink beer. You know, we want to be there to show our balloons. So we are just as disappointed when we can't fly or can't show our balloons, you know, as the people that come out and want to see them. So, that's why we make every effort we can to do something, to be able to have something out with the balloon, something for us to do and something for the spectators to see, even if it's just, you know, what we call a field of fire. If it's too windy, mm-hmm. and set up the balloons and you can see the flames. So, and when it gets really, really cold, I mean, it's like your car. It's like anything else that doesn't like to work as well when it's really cold, you know, so sometimes, you know, some equipment, you know, doesn't want to work when it's really cold.
Yeah.
Know? So that's why, you know, that optimum time for us is if it's in the teens or 20s and, you know, low winds and, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't matter really so much if it's cloudy. I mean, sunny skies are great, you know, it's nothing right. better than a sunny winter day. And it's really cool ballooning because on the surface it might be 20 degrees, but once you ascend and get above the, you know, that layer of the earth where you get away from the cold surface and you just mm-hmm. start feeling the effects of the sun. I mean, I've had flights where on the surface, it's like I said, 15, 20 degrees and you get to 2,000-3,000 feet and all you're feeling is the effects of the sun. It's 40, 50 degrees.
Oh, wow. You know? I would have thought it was the other direction that it gets colder as you get higher, but
see, there's just in that tropopause, that area between the surface and up to 7 or 8,000 feet, you know, you're not feeling those long-term effects. But yes, once you get over 12,000-15,000 feet, it does get much, much colder.
Interesting. So, kind of what you were saying, though, very weather dependent. And I know I was talking to John earlier in the episode about, you know, people can check the Hudson Hot Air Fair website, social media platforms to just that morning. And I know it's sometimes kind of a touch and go up to maybe, you know, 30 minutes before the balloons potentially launch as far as whether, you know, the pilots decide they're going to go or not. So I'd encourage people listening. And, you know, if people have been there before, they kind of know the drill. And I would also urge that people, you know, be understanding about if they can't fly, it's not on the pilots. It's not anyone's right. fault. That's Mother Nature. So
another event that I'll be at between now and the Hudson Hot Air Fair is in Lake Havasu City, Arizona. And okay. we have the same issues there with an event that's, even though it's a warmer climate, I mean, it's generally this time of year in Lake Havasu City, which is right at sea level, you know, you're looking at temperatures that are generally in the 60s and 70s, but, you know, there we still have weather issues there where it might be too windy and we can't fly. So it's not just because, you know, people have said that, well, you should do it in summer, don't do it in winter, you know, doesn't make a difference, you know,
right.
it's just, that's the way the weather is. And if there's anybody out there that can control the weather, you're a better person than me, you know, because, you know, we just leave that up to the good Lord to control the weather. And yep. he decides whether what we can do and what we can't do. So it's not because it's winter, you know, it's just the way it is. And you're right. People can stay tuned to the, now we've got all the social media where we try, you know, to update as quickly as we can. But it's like anything else. Don't just rely on that. If you want to come to the event, you know, realize that there's a chance we may not go. But if you want to come out, you know, and take that chance and be patient and understanding. And, you know, if it doesn't happen, you know, go have, you know, go visit the arts and crafts and, yep. you know, have a hot chocolate. You know, we've got exactly. plenty of other things that we try to do. And the whole Hudson community tries to have other events as well as the balloons. That in the event that we can't get the balloons off, you know, there's other things to do. Just, you know, be patient and be understanding, you know, pretty much like anything else, you know.
Yep, exactly. I mean, yeah, fingers crossed that the weather cooperates this year. But like you said, even if not, there's plenty to do. Right. I had a kind of a random question for you. So you mentioned that ballooning, you can't do it by yourself. And part of it is the chase vehicle, I think you maybe call it.
Right.
Talk to me about how they know where to go, or just kind of that process of, you know, the vehicle that's got to go wherever the balloon ends up once it's flying and to pick it up and bring it back. What's that like? You know, is the pilot communicating with that vehicle, or how do they know where to go? I've always been curious about that.
Sure. And that's a great question because, you know, even in our my regular flying with, if I'm doing promotions or if I'm doing balloon rides, you know, people are like, oh, well, how do we get back? Or so the balloon took off. Now, is it coming back here? No, you know, that's not quite how it works. So, you know, we had, everybody's got a chase vehicle, and generally it's going to be either a pickup truck or an SUV and a trailer or a van. Which is my preferred mode, is I've got a 15 passenger van that we load the equipment in the back, and then we can have the people in the front. All the equipment is loaded on the van. We get to the site wherever we're going to launch. We offload everything. We inflate it there with the people and the equipment there. And then once the balloon takes off, you know, we go and fly, and the crew packs everything up and then gets in the van and chases us. And that's exactly what it's called. It's a chase crew. Nowadays, you know, we've got great forms of communications. We've got a much better two-way radio communications. We've got cell phones. We've got GPS. So I've got actually a program on my phone that my wife as a crew chief has on her phone. It's a, it's an app called Glimpse. I think it was originally designed for hiking and stuff like that. And it gives, it basically pings my phone, you know, so my wife can look at her phone and see a map and see exactly where I am. And I can look at that same app on my phone and know exactly where she is. We also have two-way radio communications, VHF, UHF radios, which, you know, like anything, isn't always reliable or dependable. But that's what we do. And I've got another app that's an actual, that's a moving map that I have on board, you know, electronic moving map. And then she's got another electronic moving map so we can see where each other are to make it easier. We don't necessarily even have to talk to each other. You know, we just know our positions because I know that wherever I'm going to land, if my crew is there, awesome. You know, that makes my landing sites. I can make a smaller landing site, you know, if the crew is there. If they're not there, I may need more space for the balloon to stop, you know, otherwise then, ultimately, or the best part is if the crew is there at landing, you know, they can weigh on the balloon so we can stay right where we're at and we don't tip and drag and all that stuff. But yeah, you know, two-way radio communication, texting, stuff like that, you know, and again, in wintertime, it's a little bit trickier because electronics don't always like working. But when I started ballooning, and for a very long time, we had CB radios and paper maps. You know, and,
old school, yep.
And if you lost your paper map and it went overboard, you know, then you got nothing, you know, and, you know, CB radios, you know, the old handheld CB radios weren't very dependable and batteries wouldn't last long. So, you know, it's, and good crew and my family is good crew. They're a great crew. They've been doing it for a long time. They can anticipate what I'm going to do just because they've been working with me for so long, and you can see me and know where to go and stuff like that. And some people have a great sense of direction that they can, you know, that they can do that. And my son is really good at that. My wife, yeah, she needs a map, but my son can kind of just tell what my trajectory is, where I'm headed and what roads he should be on. So for me as a pilot, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I crewed for a long time. It sounds weird, but I love crewing just as much as I do flying. Oh, you know, okay. I mean, if I'm getting to that point now where my kids are training, and once they're in the air, I will have just as much fun being on the ground chasing, you know, and as flying.
For those of us who, like myself, who've never been on a hot air balloon before, how do you describe that experience? Maybe, does it get old, you know, that kind of view that you get and just the feeling that you get? Or how would you sum up, you know, what it's like to be up in one of those balloons?
You know, it never gets old. And that's because every flight is different. You know, it's not like, you know, when you're driving to work, you're driving the same road every day. You see the same people, you know, walking down the road, you know, you pass the same cars, all that. Ballooning is not like that. Even if I take off from the same spot and land at the same spot that I've done before, that flight is going to be different because of all the conditions, weather conditions, people, things that you see. I mean, you know, I can fly over a wooded area or fly over St. Croix River and not see any live wildlife or anything one day, and the next day then you see all kinds of wildlife. So, so that's every experience is going to be different. It's hard to describe. You know what I mean? It's a feeling like you've never had before. Like, I like to say, it's like, for me, you know, as a veteran pilot, it's like being able to stand on my front porch anywhere that I want to and just look out and see whatever, everything. You know, it's just, it's kind of undescribable. And that's, most people will say that two after they go on a flight, they'll be like, oh, wow, I can see why you couldn't really describe it. You know, it's just the beauty and majesty of the earth with just the earthly sounds. I mean, it's not like being in an airplane or a helicopter where first off, an airplane and a helicopter, you've got that motion that makes you go one way or the other. And you've got all that sound, you know, or you're inside of a steel tube and can't really hear anything and just see how it's just really, you know, it's like floating like a bird, you know. Yeah. I mean, you're just above the, you know, not necessarily above the clouds, but above the trees and landscape. And that's why with the balloon ride business, I like to be able to fly over areas that people are familiar with. You know, like for example, here, you know, I'll have people that want to go for a balloon ride that live in a neighboring community. You know, I'll try to be able to plan it so I can fly over that area so they can see their house, see familiar things, stuff like that. Doing balloon rides in other areas of the country, you know, it's a big touristy thing, you know, and sure. In the Southwest, you know, a lot of people come to, you know, the Phoenix area, the Albuquerque area, Colorado Springs area to take balloon rides because it's a big thing there. So just to see that landscape and things like that's pretty awesome. But, you know, I still say people also ask me, maybe it was on your list, where's my favorite place to fly? I still love flying here at home in Wisconsin. Hmm. You know, we've got such beautiful topography here and you know, the people, you know, are so nice. We don't have a lot of issues with people complaining that you're flying over their yards or complaining that you're landing on their property. You know, most everybody is warm and inviting. It's that good old Midwest feel. And it's pretty cool. I mean, we've landed in people's backyards or neighborhoods and they've invited us in for coffee, for breakfast, for whatever, you know. It's, you know, we've made friends with people where we've landed, you know. It's just such a great, fun thing that, you know, 95% of the time brings smiles and joy to everybody's face.
Yeah, that's awesome. Even for someone like myself, who's doesn't do great with heights, you know, I think I could get over that part of it to enjoy a ride here. But I'd love to, one of these days I'll have to get up in one. And I know they fly quite a bit here, even during the summer in the St. Croix Valley area. Yeah, very cool.
The thing about it, and I tell people this too, that say that about, you know, the problems with height and stuff like that. It's like most people that have a fear of heights really have a fear of falling, where they don't have that control, where they feel that they can fall. You know, like I don't like putting Christmas lights on the roof of my house. I don't like climbing on the roof of my house, but I'll fly to 8,000 feet and feel very secure with that basket that's up around my waist. You know, you're not going to be able to fall out, you know, things like that. So as long as, you know, I tell people, as long as you, when we're in there and you look out, you don't look directly over the edge. If that bothers you, don't look directly over the edge. Just look out and enjoy the scenery. And you don't think about where, you know, what altitude you're at and whatnot, because you feel safe in that basket. You feel secure. You feel a little bit more in control.
Absolutely. Well, last question for you, Ken, before I let you go. So I normally ask everyone on the podcast what their favorite thing about Hudson is. You're welcome to answer that, but since you're not, you don't live here, you do visit here quite a bit. Maybe I'll ask you, what's your favorite thing about coming to Hudson for the hot air affair?
We enjoy the restaurants, the eateries and stuff there. You know, you got so many different ones, and you know, the Smiling Moose, you've got Dick's Bar and Grill, makes great Bloody Marys. You know we've got, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's really the hospitality, that small town warm hospitality. Flying in Albuquerque, you know, a city of millions and millions of people, you just don't have that same feel, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about events like in Hudson, where it's just a small town and people are cool. And when you pull into a parking lot, they, you know, they see that you're a balloonist and they say hi, you know, and they greet you at Fleet Farm and say, hey, you got one of the balloons. You know, it's just, it's so much about the people, I think, you know, and the cool things about the community. I mean, you know, Hudson is such a quaint community, and even going across the river over to Stillwater, you know, it's such a cool little quaint community. It's just fun to be able to be a part of that, you know. And I'm not going to say that people of Hudson treat us like kings, but they treat us pretty well. And that's pretty cool feeling. The parades are really one of the most fun part of the event for us too. You know, it's a short parade, but boy, it's a lot of fun, and yeah, you know, it brings a lot of people out, and you know, it's really a good time. It's just that cool little quaint feeling that you get in a town like that.
Yeah, it's been cool to see this town, how it rallies around the hot air fair every year and gets excited and everyone gets involved. And, you know, obviously the event couldn't go off without balloonists like yourself, Ken. So, you know, thanks for all the years that you've been coming here. And like I said, fingers crossed that the weather cooperates. But regardless of what happens, there's always a lot going on. But I really appreciate the time today. And
One thing I want to add that had in my mind, every year we try to do school programs where a few of us come in early and we go to the elementary schools and even the high school in town. And if the weather allows, we'll stand the balloon up. But most of the time we go into the gym and, you know, we have the kids come out. And if we can inflate the balloon inside the gym, put cold air in it so the kids can see it, we really try to help educate the kids, you know, so they know and understand what's going on, you know, with the balloons. And it's really cool to be able to share that with the kids. And we do a number of school programs there every year. And that's, you know, there's a couple of us, like I say, that do it every year. And I know one guy that's probably one of the big reasons why he comes to Hudson is because he can do that school program, you know, and share with kids. And I've had kids that I've done the, you know, that I've shared with at a school program come back to me 5 years, 10 years later, you know, as young adults and say, hey, you know, you came to my school when I was in seventh grade and it was so cool, you know. It's showing the kids. And then of course we tell the kids, now you go home and tell your parents to bring you out to the hot air. but it's really cool. Again, it's another one of those community things that we do, you know, to try and help the people. And even with EP Rock School, we wouldn't be able to have this event if it wasn't for, you know, the people at EP Rock School letting us use the school and helping educate the kids and working together, the, you know, the whole school district there in Hudson has been so supportive of us, you know, with using the facility and doing the school program. So
that's great. Yeah. I remember seeing pictures in the past of the balloon at the schools too. So that's another awesome addition and just another great thing that this event brings to the community. So again, Ken, thanks so much and really appreciate the time and fingers crossed that the weather cooperates and the balloons are able to launch this year.
Yep. It's great talking to you.
Well, and for anyone listening who doesn't know when the hot air fair is, it's the first weekend in February every year. This year, it's February 2nd, 3rd, and 4th at EP Rock Elementary is where they launch. But there's events going all throughout town all weekend. So, you know, be sure to check out HudsonHotAirFair.com for any more information on that. But I really appreciate everyone tuning into this episode today. Thanks to John Knutson and Ken Walter for their time as well. And everyone have a great day.